Okay, everybody, welcome to today's meeting of the Regulatory Committee. It actually says Thursday, the 2nd of August on it.
It was supposed to be, and then we moved it.
Okay.
On Friday. My apologies for that.
It's okay. In fact, I do actually wonder whether you avoid putting it on there, so your agenda feels as flexible.
Fluid.
Fluid. Maybe not. Anyway, I don't think, yes, we do have an apology from councillor Gretchen Robinson. We'll take that as okay and agreed. There's no leave of absence. Says attendance, thank you to staff, but I could never see you because of the column. So now I realise that you're there. Welcome. Any conflicts of interest? No public forum. So that's a change. Presentation, confirmation. I'm happy to, I've read the minutes of the previous minutes, happy to move those minutes. Do we have a seconder? Councillor Noon, I move the motion. Those for, aye, against, carried. The acceptance of the minutes. Right, actions. The first one, actually both are in process, I see. The ability to enforce the current regional airplane air zone 1 provisions, and I also see arranging a meeting with governance staff of environment Canterbury regarding wallaby control issues, and I hopefully other wider things, Councillor Woodhead. So you're on the case with that, are you?
Yes. And well, I'll be frank. We keep talking about having a meeting, but we just need to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, last time actually. Their councillors flew down. We had a meeting at the airport, and they flew back, and they were back in the afternoon. You know, like, the whole process was over in a half a day.
We're talking about having a meeting in Oamaru, potentially, or maybe us going as far as Timaru, but I certainly made it quite clear to their chief executive and their chairperson and their South Canterbury councillor, who Councillor Lawton and I spent a lot of time with on the regional tour, and they've got the message. I'll tell you the full story another day, but about wallabies and other matters.
Okay, we look forward to that. That's actually about time. And Southland.
Councillors. Because I've received an email from ECAN about a visit to Waitaki on the 19th of September.
Okay, excuse me. Laura, do you want to read that out, please?
I've received an email from the committee secretary at ECAN, asking that they're arranging for their councillors to visit the Waitaki District Council in Oamaru, tentative date being Wednesday the 19th of September, looking for interest for our councillors to join them in a meeting in Oamaru. So would that be timely? I just thought
there
that message just come up. So we'll progress that. Sorry,
what do you think? I would have thought definitely, even if not all of us can attend, at least some of us can.
I think it's South and Councillor Noon were in Kurau just a few weeks ago, and it was quite a clear message that they wanted a political meeting and between the two councils. And so that's good. We assured them that it was in the wings, but it just hadn't got there, but we were going to push it anyhow when we cancelled it.
Okay, so
that's Wednesday the 19th of September.
That's what I've been asked to check with the chair and the chief executive.
Right, so we have an audit and risk program, but we might have to see if we can slip that a day or something, Mr. Donnelly.
That is the following day, it's the 20th, isn't it?
Okay,
anyway,
That's a detail, and you and the CE will set up an agenda and how to get there and all this type of, I assume a meeting just between our council and their council, as opposed to Waitaki. Not Waitaki, it's just our two councils.
Yes. Yeah.
And in due course, I'd love to have another one with Southland, yeah?
Mr. Chair, just on the actions and just around wallabies, I saw somewhere recently Environment Canterbury had put some significant emphasis on wallaby control around Waimarie and down to the river, and had allocated oodles of cash.
$90,000 oodles of cash.
I'm interested to know if we know any more about that and what it means for us.
I can tell you.
Through the chair, that's following on from a number of operational meetings we've had with them over the last couple of years, so operational staff. highlighting the issue of wallabies being outside the containment area. Previous to that, they only had budget to deal with them inside the containment area. So they have allocated some funding for wallabies south of the Waitaki River.
Yeah, but probably less than it appeared in the paper.
Yeah.
Well, 90,000 doesn't seem much. How much are we putting in? And it's their wallabies.
Mr. Chairman, the money that we were led to believe from the people from Canterbury that were there, they're Waitaki people, but in the Canterbury Regional Council area, that money is being spent on tightening up the wallabies moving up to the Rangitata and into Mount Cook. And the leakage, as our own staff and Scott staff and know, there's a huge leakage there at Aviemore, and that leakage is not, there's no investment going into that area, and we got that from two of the leading farmers. I'll let you, Councillor Noon, because it's your portfolio.
I think the other important aspect too is the farmers are doing so much control as well, and I think it was about $35 a hectare that they're spending on wallaby control. So not only ECAN talking about putting some money or more money in that area, but the farmers are doing so much. But a point I wanted to make was that when Councillor Brown and I were up there, the Maniatota Pest Company had representatives at this gathering of local farmers, and there's also a pest company there, the pest company that does the control, wallaby control, on the properties in and around the Waitaki River. And the key point was around the wallabies coming from the containment area across into the Otago region. And the control of wallabies in the containment area is essentially lacking. So high population, and what they want to do, they want to go somewhere where there's a bit more feed. So these containment fences aren't really effective. They go under them, they go over them. And then, of course, you've got the two dams and a couple of bridges over the Waitaki. So it funnels them in across the bridges, and they're into essentially either Otago region or the small part of the Canterbury or ECAN district on the south side of the Waitaki. So improving that, those access ways, well, not proving, creating a deterrent, i.e. Cattle stop or that type of infrastructure that would slow the number of wallabies coming across, that was one thing that was talked about, and keeping the numbers down in that containment area, so doing more in that space in terms of control.
Have we got a committee meeting between now and the 19th of September? Does anybody know?
6 weeks.
What's the next one?
Yeah, we will have, won't we?
So, Scott, I'm wondering whether, like, just in your director's report, you'd give us a bit of an update on any regulatory issues that we need to be briefed on, you know, prior to the ECAN. So
committees are the week before.
Yeah, so wallabies will be one, an update of, you know, the issues and what are the issues that we need to work through with ECAN.
Good report written by a couple of Scott's staff on wallabies, which is
good.
A good read.
Is there any other pest issues or regulatory issues with ECAN?
I'll consider those.
Yeah.
The only other, just one that I would suggest is, of course, the Lower Waitaki irrigators that spoke to us today. They get their water from ECAN, but the effects are ours. Yep. So we could talk about that.
Interesting. Sounds good.
And the other thing is the one that Doug quite often talks about, the river management issues that we share with ECAN on the lower stretches of the river.
I'd just like to say, just, and you may get it in the report of Scott, that the two men that we've got working on the wallabies are excellent, aren't they, Councillor Noon?
Exceptional.
And though the people that live on the Canterbury side are very envious of the work that our two chaps are putting in, and with the training of their dogs, because they've actually been practicing with their dogs over on their properties, helping them out to get them used to trying to get to the isolated situation of which the wallabies are in on an air patch, so to speak. So, but it would be interesting for that report. But I just wanted to say the two chaps are doing a great job.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on then. Our first report is the Director's Report on Progress, prepared by Scott McLean. This describes the regulatory activity and the processes for the reporting period. The first section is compliance grading and changes for the proposed best practice guidelines. Table 1 gives a breakdown and explanation of the current compliance grading system. And then lower down,
there's a table two, which has been a recommended future compliance grading system based on risk, and it grades things from full compliance to low risk, moderate non-compliance, significant non-compliance, and in relation to the significant environmental consequences and or risk of adverse environmental effects. So that's quite important in terms of reporting, regulatory reporting, in terms of how we interpret. There might be some questions around that. In terms of dairy inspections, we had some discussion about this earlier today, but dairy inspections are conducted to assess compliance with the water plan rules. The focus is on the storage and disposal of contaminants such as dairy effluent and silage effluent. However, an actual dairy inspection is carried out, is considered on a broader risk basis, which also includes the water quality of the catchment. So potentially we'll find out how good our inspection regime actually is. We're doing inspections in catchments where there's obviously an issue, so we would expect some of the, we would expect to get some findings that confirm where those issues are coming from. Scott, maybe that's an issue we need to talk about. Forestry inspections seems to be an area, Scott, that's a new work front. Since May of this year, we've had a new NES for plantation forestry. Council has received 90 notifications of work from foresters. They've predominantly been for harvesting and earthworks, some inquiring in the forestation. And a template is being developed by OSC staff to process the information, expected to be on their website in the coming months. Slash and waterways has proved to be a major discussion point. I know there was an article in the ODT in the last period, and a forestry risk matrix has been put together to assist. There's an update on wetlands and some of our inspections and so forth. Scott, any general comments before I open it up?
Thank you, through the chair. Just following on from some feedback from the last committee meeting, where some clarity and further explanation on some of our process, particularly RMA compliance and how we grade them. That's why I've put that in there, plus the new recommendation from MFE in conjunction with the working party from regional councils on how to best grade non-compliance into the future. So I think the key difference is there, and you can see them on the coloured table, is it gives some more descriptors, but it also includes compliance with relevant national environmental standards. So whilst a lot of the RMA compliance work centres around consents, some of those consents were issued many years ago and things have moved on environmentally. So this grading system allows us to now consider other factors such as environmental standards. So it's a good move, plus it's consistent. And the idea is that a compliance officer from Otago could go to Northland, undertake a similar inspection and basically come up with the same assumption as an officer up there would. So provides that national consistency and the ability to factor in other comparators.
Yeah, I mean, it avoids the situation we had previously where you could have a significant non-compliant but with no adverse effects, which was a category that was a little bit of an anomaly, but nevertheless. Sorry, carry on.
Oh, no, nothing further on that.
Nothing further?
Yep.
I'm going to open it up. Any discussion? Maybe going through. Any discussion in relation to those guidelines? Hopefully that makes some sense. It should be quite clear. Are we going to use that, you know, like for the next dairy inspections, that spectrum? When's that going to kick in?
We're starting to use that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we get a dairy inspection report, it'll be on that basis, yeah?
No, not quite. So this is for our RMA compliance. It's mainly consent monitoring. So the dairy inspections we inspect under the relevant rules under the water plan. But we'd still use that, the basis of that, yeah.
Okay, and the dairy inspections, we're going to get a fuller report, I think, next meeting.
Yes.
Anyway, opening it up. Forestry, what about forestry? Did everybody understand the issue that was in the ODT? Yeah? Anything you want to tell us about that, Scott? What were the learnings out of that? It suggested that we came to an impasse with the DCC, the ORC, and in terms of access to people's property and forestry over a stream.
Yeah, through the chair. That was the staff inspected it with the forestry company. It was deemed that there'd be more environmental harm done to the waterway if machinery was to get in there and clear it. So the issue with the landowner access lies with the city. They own the road. So it was actually a separate issue to the...
separate issue?
Yeah. So we were concerned primarily about the waterway. They were concerned about the road.
Yeah, and is that basically the same issue that's referred to here in terms of slash and waterways?
Through the chair, the slash and the waterways under the NES's guidelines and expectations on how slash will be managed at time of activity. So that's slightly separate from the mobilisation of slash. Well, they use a formula to work it out.
Okay.
Within Dr. Palmer's directorate, there's a piece of work underway looking at risk factors around Otago for forestry slash and other vegetation types.
Okay, sounds good. Councillor Noon, then Councillor Laws.
So just a brief comment, and when the article about the Mount Allen Road access was in the ODT, I flicked an email around and just wondered what was going on, and I ended up chatting with Juanita's CEO, who I know. That's all right. And he explained the background. It is quite complex. There's a lot going on, and the city are obviously thinking about stepping back from maintaining that road as well. You've also got those two landowners that live across the waterway that lease land from Torrey Gorge Rail, and there's a whole lot of balls up in the air at the moment. So very complimentary, Juanita, we're very complimentary of the staff and the feedback they got from them, and they're still unsure whether they're going to lodge a consent further down the track. So,
very good. Well done, Scott. Councillor Laws.
Can I talk about 2.3?
You can talk about anything that's on this.
Forestry inspections.
Yeah.
I don't think, Scott, you've presented a more disturbing paper than what you've outlined here. Which identifies significant problems, but interestingly no solutions. And I have brought to this table before in the last 18 months my concern about forestry plantations in Otago, their harvesting, and the potential for environmental harm and land degradation. And obviously the government recognises that with its national policy statement, but this report, brief as it might be, and just on this page, what, there's 5-6 paragraphs, suggests we've got some major issues in our catchment or in our regional area. You concentrate on slash, but it could be sediment runoff and things like that as well. And I'm interested in the fact that there seems an overall view here that, I'm asking the question. Are we conducting sufficient forestry inspectors? Do we have sufficient resource and personnel to be able to do the job that the community might expect of us?
Through the chair, since Plan Change 6A became operative in 2014, we've engaged significantly with the forestry issue, so that obviously precedes the NES becoming operative. By and large, the forestry industry have been really willing to work with us. One thing that, you know, that industry is facing is they are harvesting trees now that were planted 2.5-3 decades ago, where expectations around environmental management were quite different. The NES is in one aspect quite permissive for afforestation, for encouraging forestry. But it also sets out some expectations on things like harvesting, sediment mitigation, and that. So at the moment, staff are working, because it's come out, it's new for the industry, it's new for us. We're working pretty closely with them. Most forest companies that operate to the industry code of practice, there's, you know, been some really good environmental initiatives in Otago that have won awards that we've certainly supported. So the will and intent to operate well and environmentally minded is there. The NES sets out certain expectations, and a lot of that's to do with reporting. So your question about resourcing, this is very resource heavy. We have now got, you know, it's only just operative in the beginning of May. We've had to put a full-time equivalent just dealing with the NES for plantation forestry. So that's significant. That's likely to grow over time. Yes, but we're working through with the industry to sort of standardise some templates, because the information we're getting from them largely meets the NES requirements, but it's coming in all different formats because there's no standardised template or format that it's to come in. And so we're sort of moving them all into the direction where we're going to get the information that we need in a format that's most useful to us. But at the moment, it's coming thick and fast.
Is that a yes or a no? Do you have the resources to do the job that the National Policy Statement requires?
Through the chair, I'll be seriously considering through the next annual planning process upping the resource or seeking the budget to up the resource, because I would say no, I'm not resourced at present.
Apologies. I know I have an interest in forestry, and maybe if I'd been more alert, I would have pushed this aside for somebody else to chair that particular aspect, but I don't think it's a biggie on this instance. Any other questions?
Mr. Mount Allen, Mr. Chairman, I mean, so what happens now? I mean, that's the Tory River, I take it, that they're close to.
Tributary of.
Yeah, and could end up in the Tory in a flood situation. I mean, somebody's going to have to haul them out at some stage, surely.
Through the chair, I understand, I haven't been to the site myself, but I understand it's fairly well locked up. It's not likely to mobilise any further. But yeah, I mean, in terms of clearing that debris, it fell well short of our permitted activities for clearance of flood debris. So the advice given to the forestry company was you can't do it under permitted activity, you'd need to apply for consent, and it would probably be a pretty high bar to get consent given the sheer amount of work in that water body that would, and the damage, the resulting damage. But they are going to consider that and consider ways that they might do that in a low impact way.
Very good. Councillor Deacon.
Chairman, I've often noted over the last 10, 15 years, every time there's a fresh down the Tyree, the amount of stuff that comes out and gets stuck under bridges at out Polo is worrying, and I wonder about the impact on the life of those bridges. Have we given any thought, I know this is not directly Scott's responsibility, it's Gavin, to debris traps, say, up on the Tyree north of Outram, for example, to stop this damaging process happening every time there's a flood on that river?
Any comment on that one, Gavin?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, yes, from time to time we do consider the issues around debris management, and of course we have debris traps ourselves on the Leith and the Lindsay.
Yep.
Comes down to, in some ways, where's the best place for it to accumulate, and so sometimes it might actually be best at a road bridge where you can get access to get the material out. Bridges owned by roading authorities are usually designed for impact loading from debris. The biggest issue is normally that the temporary debris rafting on a bridge increases the likelihood of scour during a flood and a scour hole developing, and that's normally a design factor as well. So yes, it's an issue we do keep an eye on. I'm satisfied at the moment things are okay as long as the infrastructure owner gets in there and clears their bridge promptly, as they usually do.
District plans are typically the mechanism in terms of setback for planting from boundaries, and I assume river edges as well, Gavin, would it be? The thing is that sometimes, you know, they could potentially be holding the bank together, but...
Yeah, I mean, debris comes from all sorts of sources, wilding pines, plantation, etc.
The mechanism for planting is through via the district plan anyway, and, you know, and maybe that's the mechanism in the future, to make sure that the trees are set back from the water edge or whatever.
It could be.
Any other discussion? Okay, everybody, give yourselves a shake. Otherwise, we're going to fall asleep before we get to the end of this.
Report. I'll move the report.
Okay, we've got to move the report. Do we have a second to the report? I'll put the motion that this report be received and noted. Those for?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Right, thank you. The next one, enforcement activities. Prepared by Peter Callahan, thank you. Details of the RMA, Biosecurity Building Act, enforcement activities. Okay, those
infringement notices under a complaint response. There were two regarding odour. There were legal proceedings. There's one in relation to sediment potentially entering water. There was a number of abatement notices, one for odour, one a structure is likely to dam or divert, and there was a number of infringement notices, seven in fact, following inspections. I suspect they're dairy inspections, effluent and silage. Was that through our dairy inspections? I think we'll get more of that later in the confidential report. And also, there's an overall assessment between this year and previous years in terms of the total infringement and the total legal proceedings. I think we'll see that the number, total numbers in this year are significantly down for previous years, particularly in relation to the dairy. And so there's an obvious question there about why. Anyway, I open it up.
We've got a bit of a problem because I want to talk about something. There's no media here, so that's useful. But it might need to go, it might be in the public excluded.
Yeah.
I've just read the public excluded thing and it's not there. So...
We'll talk about
raise
that.
It now.
Or you talk, no, talk okay. About in the public excluded if it's confidential.
Well, no, I don't think it is. Otherwise, it would be in the public excluded section. I'm talking about the prosecution of the Kaikoura stream spill, which has been mentioned in the public in the last week. Kaikoura stream, paint?
The paint.
The investigation. Yeah. And it's not here in either of these issues, but it's been covered by, so it's not in the paper that's come on this, yep. And it's not in the publicly excluded section, but
okay.
Sure as hell been through the media in the last week.
Through the chair, that was last year, and it just the media just popped up the other day and said, oh yeah, what happened with that? So it was reported through this, but well before we'd agreed to have some detail in public excluded. So what we're reporting in the public excluded portions of these committees is what's legal proceedings that have happened since we agreed that we would bring that detail forward, not retrospectively looking back to prior to that decision being made.
So you've already reported to this committee on Kaikoura Valley Stream pollution?
Yes, that would have been reported as a warning given to that company.
Maybe in summary, but not in detail like that.
That was in, I think, November or December last year.
Okay.
Any comments on it?
No.
Well, but where are we with the prosecutions of the QLDC and the Clutha District Council for effluent, because there's no update here of that.
Or wastewater, yeah.
Yeah.
Public excluded. That type of thing, that's why we have a public excluded.
Yeah.
Okay, can I seek some clarification here? As I said, there's no media. Why, when we've lodged prosecution notices,
yeah,
and it's a matter of public record, is it in the public? Would it be in the public excluded section?
I suspect it comes down to what
because
your question is.
Well, you see, remember we had this discussion,
yeah,
and the idea was, no, we're going to be much more open, more proactive.
So, what's the question?
Well, the question—that's why I'm looking for the update.
Okay, so
it's not there.
Okay, so what's the answer?
Through the chair, you may recall our in-house solicitor giving an explanation for that. As once charges have been laid, if you were to talk about the detail of it publicly, that may disadvantage the alleged offender. They may get judged in public prior to having a fair trial. It may. What I'll do is I will recirculate the paper that legal counsel.
No. Isn't Michael simply just asking what's the status? You know, is it? You know, where is it at? Is it sitting in somebody's in-tray?
No, definitely not sitting in someone's in-tray. The charges were laid with the court.
Yep.
And this is really stretching my memory. I think one has pleaded guilty, was looking for a suspended sentence. We went back and said, can't really agree to a suspended sentence, but would consider an enforcement order. Which is actually a more positive thing because it's where you agree through the court about what they're going to do to prevent this happening again.
effectively?
I suspect that type of information is what goes in the confidential side.
Usually,
but in
usually.
Terms, so that my question to you is not that detail, is where is it sort of at, you know, in five words, which part of the process is it at?
It's in the court process and it's at sentencing.
It's at sentencing, okay. And if you've got...
Okay, but in future...
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we had that discussion.
Yes, yeah. I would have expected to see that reported in here, so yes, I will follow
the
that up.
Yeah, so maybe the status of where it's at, and it's in the court process for sentencing.
Yeah.
Noted.
And then in confidential, if there's anything underlying, we can ask that. Okay, any other questions?
I'm just going to be a pain if that's all right.
No?
Through the chair. Right, so Scott, we've talked about this before because I get... No, it's not too bad. So if we turn to page 10 and you've got your... Resource Management Act, right, so you've got your infringement notice on table one, right, then you come down and you've got your authorised legal proceedings, now, and then we go over and we've got the abatement notice, and then we have inspections, and we have infringement notice for inspections. Is that when you would come out to me and I've got problems with my effluent because it's from an inspection as compared to somebody ringing you up on the phone? Is that the difference?
Yeah.
Why it's in a different table.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Can I also say, sorry, Carmen, that, and it even, it's not, Scott, it's not in your actual outcomes in the regulatory report, but it was actually agreed in the previous minutes that we would come back with an explanation of the difference between abatement notices, infringements, and this type of thing, because that question's been asked before, and that should actually be in the outcome. I was going to bring it up, but I'll let it
lie. Well, I can talk to that now. An infringement notice is a fine issued pretty promptly, so it doesn't have to go through the courts. An abatement notice is a notice to cease an activity that's causing environmental harm.
So, if we carry on down, there's another lot, see, that's got inspections B. And then you've got another lot of infringement notices. Is the B because inspections that you've gone out physically? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, that's routine. That'd be routine monitoring.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
All the other stuff is complaints.
Yep. That's what. Thank you. Yep. Okay. So, let me ask you this question. You've done your abatement notice. You've asked them to cease to stop. And then there's obviously some money. You know, they get stung. Then does it go, though, when you're really nosy, does it go to the authorised legal proceedings? What's the next big grunt? You know, how does it work? You obviously have infringement, which is the fine, am I right?
Then we need a report on this again,
and
Scott.
Then do you get authorised legal proceedings? Is it one, two, three?
Yes.
Sort of like three strikes and you're out, and then you're heading to...
Not quite, no.
Okay.
No, you don't, it's no, you don't, it's not a staged approach, it's the... decision, the enforcement decision is made on the size and severity of the event, and there's a whole range of factors, but I'll bring a report back.
That explains
all the thing. So someone can be issued an abatement notice,
yes.
and comply with it, and no further action will be taken.
Yeah.
If they don't comply with an abatement, depending on what it is, they may proceed to other enforcement action. That may be an infringement, or it could be through to prosecution.
Yep. Okay, so we'll bring that back. And
you could issue a number of infringement notices for an ongoing offence.
Yep.
So.
Okay.
We're obviously doing something right, though, because as you notice, if you go through perhaps nearly all the statistics, they're half or they're less. So is it saying that there are some good things happening?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I'll ask Scott, why have the statistics gone down?
Through the chair, there could be any range of...
what's the real answer?
Well, there could be any range of reasons. You know, it might be a year where...
No, come on, isn't it? What's the real answer? Why have they gone down? That's a significant
Because there's been less offences detected and proven. That's a potential factor.
I think we're dreaming.
A simple thing like a dry spring can make a huge difference.
Yeah, there's a whole range. Yeah, there's no one reason why...
Yep.
You know, but like isn't road deaths, they
but isn't it because we went lightly, you know, 12 months ago in terms of our dairy inspections? Because at the time there was the resource issue, Scott.
Oh, through the chair, there was one season where we were diverted onto the biosecurity incursion.
Yeah, when was that impact
that
on that?
Not what you're looking at there, I wouldn't have thought, no.
Okay.
Are you happy with the level of dairy inspection, Scott? Have you got the resources and everything's ticking along nicely or not?
we did. There is a funding issue, and I don't know the detail of it. There's under the Act, it's difficult to levy essentially a targeted rate on a small number of higher risk operators. We've changed our approach to every dairy farm gets an inspection to a risk-based approach. So yeah, we visit some farms often throughout the season, and some farms we won't visit for a number of seasons. So that's based on the risk profile matrix that we put to council and council agreed to. So it identifies a number of things, including the catchment you're in, infrastructure, compliance history of the property.
Okay. So, yeah. Before we all pat each other on the back, so can you explain to me then why the state of the environment monitoring basically confirms we've got some significant water quality issues in our catchments, particularly around South Otago and partly North Otago. In fact, most of the catchments have significant issues that typically go back, have a connection to the dairy farm situation. So while we're patting ourselves on the back that our dairy inspections are going really so well, our water quality have got significant issues.
What's your question?
My question is, it's quite an obvious question. I've been asking the same question for years. Why are we getting good dairy inspection outcomes but poor water quality?
Chair, you're making a causal assumption that may well not be correct. thinking about, the winter feeding on fodder beet, all that sort of stuff, nothing to do with milk.
And I'm not a farmer. However, I think this is something we are in the process of a review of 6A, and I think it's something we need to give consideration to, with that workshop, where to now. Because it's interesting, I've had a couple of chats to the Lower Waitaki boys, and there's a real peer pressure out there if anyone lets the team down in terms of the compliance. They're onto it very quickly, given the issues.
Okay, well, when we get our next state of the environment, I look forward to that discussion.
With all due respect, the problem we have is that you can't be assured that that level of inspection is satisfactory.
Yeah.
And to be honest, Scott, I'm a bit surprised by your answer, not because it's not truthful, and thank you for that, but because it means that there are some dairy farms that are not being inspected at all. And I realise you were doing the risk profile and stuff like that, but gee, that's a bit like deciding that you don't need a warrant of fitness, Michael, for your car because you've got a really good driving record. So we'll just leave you alone. And my behaviour from that would be, if the ORC is not coming round and inspecting me, I don't think I'll get a warrant of fitness this year because my chances of being caught are zero.
Through the chair, using the warrant of fitness analogy, a brand new car needs
3 years.
A much longer period of time than an older car. So we're not saying we will not inspect those properties, but it's a much lower risk. Yeah. It's much lower risk, and in terms of where we got to with council, we were resourced to visit every farm once.
And that's what I thought.
Yeah, and we knew that wasn't sufficient for targeting those operators that hadn't invested in good infrastructure, good management practices. So we wanted to visit them more often, but we weren't resourced to do that. So we developed a risk matrix, workshopped it with council, got it endorsed by council, that focuses. So
I remember that workshop, but I'll tell you what, it never said, guess what, we won't be visiting some farms for 3 or more years.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. It absolutely did. Mr. Chairman, we were jumping at shadows here.
Yes.
And I'll just remind us, the staff reviewed the dairy inspection regime because it had done what Scott said, it was going to every farm every year, and we had some that we knew had issues and risks that we needed to chase up 2-3 times a year.
Yes, that's right.
The challenge we've got is that we cannot charge them for a permitted activity until they trip into compliance-based process. So actually, we've only completed the first year, Mr. McLean, of our targeted dairy inspection.
Correct. Yep.
And we need to continue to have conversations around reviewing it and seeing how it's going. But
I think we need to be careful to jump into conclusions. There's been huge investment over time and in the dairy sector, and we've got a small group at the bottom who need a bit of a poke with a sharp stick, and we're focusing our compliance or our annual inspection activity around it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, but I will say the state of the environment confirms that there's, hang on a minute, confirms that there's some water quality issues, significant ones.
That doesn't necessarily mean there's anything illegal.
I don't know how you're correlating the two of them, though.
I mean, it's because of, sorry, again, it's this whole Steve thing in my view. You don't take action, damage to the environment, which is...
Yeah, so what I'm simply saying is there's a gap there somehow that we need to understand, because in our inspections we're typically going, tech, yes, things are good, typically, but we know there's fundamentally an issue because the water quality is often very bad.
Well, you're...
Can't you see that there's a gap? And there? No, I'm not even necessarily pointing the finger. I'm just saying there's a gap. So what's happening?
You are pointing the finger at 400 people that you I think you need to be looking broader.
Happy to.
It's not even necessarily the degradation of the water. Isn't necessarily through any illegal activity. That's the.
I never said it was. I said it was a gap.
Well, yes, you did.
Well,
you
if
said
I
that
did,
they
I
needed to be running around to make sure these people weren't breaking the law, and then the water would get better. Well, that isn't necessarily the case. We've actually spent way too much on this.
That means that we've got a policy
issue. Recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
6A.
Good. Okay. Now give them a procedural motion to make them vote.
I put, I
which then creates an illegal.
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm with you, Brian. But we're not going to get any action around here because the philosophy is you've got to do damage to the environment first.
Ignorance is bliss. I put the motion.
Exactly.
Those four.
Aye.
Against. Exactly. Carried. Okay, the next one. The consents and building control, I mean, there it is. There's no publicly notified consents. There's one application being processed, limited notified. No objections have been received. There's one appeal that'll be generating some heat. Any discussion?
Have we got a... I asked this question before. Have we got a contaminated... Oh, sorry, have I moved ahead? Are we on the same report? No,
the
for... contaminated land and hazardous sites. We have.
Hang on, that was in the
previous.
That was in the previous.
Oh, you've moved on from there.
You've moved on from there. Oh, so, okay. Is there any discussion in here, councillors? If not, the what is the recommendation? The report be noted.
Yes.
You could even move it if councillor Hope. Do we have a seconder?
Yep.
Councillor Noon. If no further discussion, I put the motion that the report be noted. Those for, aye, against, carried. Thank you.
Michael, are we doing comms today?
I close today's meeting of the Regulatory Committee.
No, we've got public excluded.
Oh, public exclusion. I do apologise.
Mr. McKay.
Okay. I move that we go into public exclusion. Councillor Woodhead, will you second that?
Yep.
I put the motion. Those for,
aye,
against, carried. Public exclusion. There it is. It's just, it's further... so it's the enforcement report, just goes into a bit more detail in terms of the infringement notices, the abatement notices, it's all in there. Is there any questions about that? We have sort of skimmed across the top of most of these. Okay, but there was, you know, silate leachate is, I think, two of them, ponded effluent was four of them, and odour, sediment, odour, and then there was the breach of the potential damage situation. I think that's basically it. Okay. Councillor Kempton.
Profound question coming up. The question is where we get, and I'm not looking here at any specific prosecution, where we get a prosecution, then presumably that automatically, there's a formula for changing your risk profile. If it's a dairy issue and a risk profile around dairy inspection, so that if you've got someone who's been prosecuted, does that change your risk profile and you're in their boots and all for the next little while?
Yeah, through the chair, yeah, so that forms part of our risk matrix. So there's things like catchments, but there's also compliance history, attitude towards improving, all of that sort of thing, culpability. Yeah.
Okay, any other further discussion? Okay, there it is. The recommendation is that the report be received and noted. Councillor Woodhead? Happy to move.
Move that. I just a question. There's a lot of reference here to the Beaumont River. Are they talking the Clutha River? Because that water race runs into the Clutha eventually. Or is there a Beaumont River as a tributary of the Clutha?
Yeah, I think there is.
There is, is it?
Yeah.
Righto.
Yeah.
All right.
Beaumont water race.
Yeah. I just hadn't heard of the Beaumont River before. Anyway, minor detail.
I don't know about a river.
Happy to move the...
Beaumont River.
Yeah.
Happy to move the recommendation.
Okay. Scott, were you going to say something?
Councillor Hope.
Councillor Hope.
I did look this up. There is a little strip.
Yeah. Great. So are you going to second the... so we've got a mover and a second. I put the motion. Report be received. And great. And then, Councillor Woodhead, you'll move to go out of public excluded. I'll second that. Put the motion. Those four. Aye. Against. Carried. Thank you.
And then let's close the meeting.
I'll close tonight's meeting of the Regulatory Committee. Thank you.
We have a workshop on our representation review. Mr. McCabe, how long do you anticipate that taking? You have a presentation?
I do, and I have no
estimate of
time.
It's 25 to 5. How long?